And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 3rd of May 2024. For many of us heading into a long public holiday weekend, and we're going to help ease you into that over the next 3 hours here on the 9 to noon show. Our Friday panel joining us very shortly. I'll introduce them in the moment. Seamus Gunn will be coming after 10, answering all your legal questions. So if you want a legal question answered, get in touch with us over the course of the next hour. I'll try and get that answered for you. And Katie and Michael will be in for That's Entertainment after 11. Right, we want you involved in the conversation throughout the 3 hours. 086 60 25000, the WhatsApp and text. If you're listening outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. And if you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And just to remind you that if it suits you, that you can watch the show if you're at home on your smart TV or your Fire Stick or your Google devices. We are on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and we're also across that app and Facebook and X on your mobile devices. Right, our panel this morning is Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Good morning to you, Paddy.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you on board. We also have with us Richard Logue, Project Manager in Transport London. Good morning, Richard.
Morning, Greg, and happy 50th birthday, by the way.
Thank you. I don't know how that secret got out. And and finally, Pat O'Connor, Professor of Sociology and Social Policy at University of Limerick. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Greg, and happy birthday.
Oh, listen, you're too kind, all of you. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, we learned this week now that 27 people will contest the European elections in Midlands North West. 5 seats are up for grabs. It makes for a very crowded field, and it's complicated too. Well, 2 candidates, in fact, claim to be the leader of the same party. Is this large entry democracy at work, I wonder? Or should we have a system that requires a bar of entry, something like a bar that must be met, something like 1,000 signatures, for an example? Paddy, what do you think? It's great to see democracy in action, the interest in people trying to vie for these seats, or should there be some sort of a criteria?
Well, anyone with a knowledge of Irish history will know that if you go back before independence and a bit before that in the landlord times, that the people weren't given the option, no matter how many signatories they had, that it was only the preserve of the landlords and the landed gentry that could actually run for office. So it's nice to see that at least has been swept away. I mean, we're supposed to live in a republic here, and the whole principle behind a republic is the principle of equality, democracy and freedom. And we're not supposed to have a class system in this country like we have, for instance, in Britain. So in principle, the 4 of us should be and are equal to the President of Ireland and the standing that he has. So I don't see there's any reason at all why anybody in the country, I know there's a certain preserve around the people that can run for presidency and so on and so forth, and they accept that. But I don't see any reason why anybody at all, if they decide to run for public office, because ultimately it's the decision of the electorate to decide who they want to represent them.
Simple as that. Pat O'Connor, what do you think?
Well, funnily enough, I don't have very strong feelings about this. I can see the 2 sides. In a way, it does make sense that you should have some indication of some support before you put your name on a whatever, on a ballot paper. And I can see that increasingly there's going to be, like we see some candidates who simply want attention, or who for themselves or want to draw attention to an issue running, which is not really the point of an election. I mean, we've seen in the UK some of the, you know, the nonsense parties or whatever. And so I suppose I can see both sides, and I, for once, don't have a strong feeling. I think it would provide an opportunity for people to begin to get an indication as to how much support they had. But as I say, for once, I'm on the fence.
Yeah, what about you? And that is fine too. What about you, Richard? Are you motivated on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm speaking as a former life as an election agent over in England. And one of the key things that one has to have when you stand for office is you have to have a certain minimum number of signatures and a minimum deposit. Now, over the years in the UK, that number of signatures has increased and the deposit itself has increased as well. And I think that's good. I do think...
Well, why is it good?
I think it's good because there's often the case where you might have people who stand as kind of joke candidates or candidates who have just doing it for vanity's sake. So to have a relatively small number of signatures at least shows that somebody has some level of backing. Now, running for Parliament, for instance, in England, you have to have a deposit now of £500, which isn't exactly chicken feed. And you have to have a minimum of, I think off the top of my head, I'm sure somebody will correct me, but I think it's around about 100 signatures from across your local constituency. Now, in the case of a vast European constituency like Connacht Ulster in Ireland, you would need therefore a higher threshold. But I do think that, you know, as Paddy rightly pointed out, you know, we live in a republic. And I think if somebody believes strongly enough that they should run for office, then there shouldn't really be a significant barrier. But I do think that you ought to have a limit of a number of signatures, plus, say, necessarily a very high, but enough of a deposit that would make you think twice. Okay. I think that's the key thing.
Paddy, how many people do you think will go 1 to 27 on the ballot paper, I wonder? We'll be there for quite some time.
Oh, very, very. I would say very, very few. And I think that people may need to pay close attention. I've actually seen a picture. I think it was your good self, was it, put it up on social media. It took 5 minutes to read it from top to bottom, and it's all colour-coded and everything. And I presume their photograph and everything was going to be on it.
Which actually, creates quite a challenge, that ballot paper, for people who are visually impaired to... Unfortunately, I want to cover that separately, but I just can't believe in 2024 that things aren't equally accessible to everyone. But anyway, sorry, further to your point, Paddy.
No, you make a very good point. For instance, there is people who are visually impaired and colourblind, for instance, who have a problem watching sport on TV because, for instance, there was an issue when Ireland and Wales were playing rugby, even though the game was in colour. People that were colourblind couldn't differentiate one team from the other. And there'll be a problem with that. But I suppose the reason why the photographs were put on the ballot paper was to sort of get around this in some shape or form. And I presume as well that people that have a disability of some form or another are allowed to bring a family member with them or something to the polling booth, aren't they, to be able to assist
them? Yeah, but that facilitates the vote, but not necessarily independence. But I take your point. Yeah. Some people will obviously, maybe fledgling in their careers or fledgling parties, will use simply throwing the name in the hat for exposure, you know, to get on in the newspapers, to get equal coverage in the press, or they should do it at the very least. That's okay too, isn't it? Even if they're just using this election as a mechanism to sort of build a base.
Well, we do. I mean, Richard made reference to a deposit. I mean, you have to pay a deposit. I don't actually know what it is if you want to run for the local authority or you want to run for national parliament. But anything at all, you see, once you start to raise the bar for qualification for entry, what you do then is the people who are marginalised or poor with disabilities or whatever, they're the people that get disproportionately affected more for this. And this way I'm against that, about putting any kind of a barrier in place. I mean, if you have a joke candidate or if you have somebody that wants to promote themselves, why not? Sure, you have, don't vote for them. And that's the end of that. I mean, we've had a long history in Britain of the Raven Looney Monster Party. They never get anybody elected and they end up getting about a couple of hundred votes or whatever. But so what? That's democracy, isn't it?
Yeah, okay.
It's also a good example of none of the above. And I think the likes of Count Binface and the Raving Monster Loony Party actually have a key part in democracy, because I think it's a perfectly legitimate choice.
But they're also starting to look kind of like, you know, potentially good people to vote into office.
Well, the Loony Party did actually get a councillor elected down in Cornwall. And he turned up, I believe, in the count in a monkey suit, literally a monkey suit, like a gorilla. And but when he finally got elected, he actually had to behave like a serious politician because they had budgets to control. You know, so sometimes joke candidates do get elected.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose I want to make the point, if you remember, Greg, back in the early days when Luke Ming Flanagan launched his political career, he was seen as a joke figure or a marginalised figure, and he was getting a paltry number of votes. I mean, he's 1-6 with the bookies now, and he's favoured to top the poll in the election the next time. He's been elected to Dáil Éireann, and he's been elected to the European Parliament. He's actually turned out to be a very responsible politician.
And a Eurosceptic to begin with, which is Pat.
Well, I'm just, and I don't know the answer to this, but certainly in general elections, you lose your deposit.
I think it's £800 you have to pay to stand as an MEP.
You lose that if you don't get a certain number of votes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in a mad way, I'd feel more comfortable actually requiring people to have 1,000 signatures than to pay €800.
I think it's about 60 at the moment. The last time I checked, I think it's about 60. But yeah, I take exactly where you're coming from. Okay, moving on to our next topic, a brief one on this, and it wasn't on the list, but I'm sure we all have opinions. Protesters gathered outside RTE headquarters in Donnybrook yesterday, calling for a boycott of this year's Eurovision Song Contest. Singers, musicians, artists and activists took part in the protest organised by the Irish Ireland-Palestinian Solidarity Campaign. It featured a die-in by health workers and scrubs depicting the Eurovision as a contest which it said was actively art-washing Israel's war crimes. So I think most people in this country are upset, aghast as to what's happening in Palestine. But there's, you know, often little we can do. But one thing we possibly could do to send a message on behalf of the people of Ireland is to boycott the Eurovision competition. It would at least perhaps send a message. Pat O'Connor, do you have a particular opinion on this one? I mean, I think the semi-finals start next week, and that's why it's thrust back into the fore. It doesn't matter a stitch, but it would send a message.
Yes, I have an opinion on this. Basically, I've been horrified by very many aspects of what's going on in Gaza, and not least of which is the murder of 15,000 children, the destruction of all universities, the murder of surgeons, all sorts of people working in hospitals. And also there have been a series of murders outside Gaza in the West Bank. So I'm afraid, as I see it, Israel is guilty of very probably genocide, certainly breaches of international law and certainly breaches of international humanitarian law in terms of the famine. And I would like to see the government has been vocal, but it has not really taken action. So there's a series of actions I'd like the government to take, including the recognition of the state of Palestine, including the occupation territories bill. But in the absence of this, yes, I do think that at least a protest would be boycotting the Eurovision. I suppose what makes it particularly obvious, right, is the fact that we have been the Western world, America, UK, Germany, have been so clear on coming out on the Russian Ukraine events. But on the other hand, we seem to be very well. Ireland has been amongst the better countries.
The only thing, Pat, with this is, though, where does this end? Because, you know, there's an awful lot of sports washing going on, whereby you've got major countries with very questionable human rights records, perhaps even in some cases supporting, financing and arming terrorist organisations. So if you start to do that with Israel as it relates to this, what's next? You know, where next? Qatar? Is it Dubai? Yeah. Is it, you know, if you start making points like this in the areas of arts and sport, where does it end?
But I think that argument, in a way, leads to paralysis. You know, I mean, there were the Dunstores workers in South Africa. There was action taken on the sports field. Some, in a way, for right or wrong, some issues. And for me, it's the murder of children. Not to mention the destruction of all universities in Gaza now have been destroyed. The destruction of health facilities. Like, in a way, I think you have to take each issue. And for me, this is, I have never felt so disquieted about any issue, I'll say. And in a way, like, okay, what difference does it make? You know,
no, I accept that. And I sort of referenced that in the preamble, but it makes a difference in that people feel their feelings are being heard.
Yes. And it also, I suppose, it's to me, this is about our humanity. It's also very obvious to see that the actions of Germany and Britain are being driven by, really, in the case of Germany, guilt over the Holocaust. Never again. But in a way, they're translating that never again into never again. Against Zionist Israel. And I suppose I also have a problem about the whole idea of why should a state be only for Jews? You know, I mean, that is the Zionist vision. We saw the idea of Northern Ireland only for Protestants, Ireland only for Catholics. Well, we all know how that ended. So really, it seems to me that there are a sizable proportion of Israel who are not Jewish, and the Zionist vision is that it is a society for a Jewish people.
And there also are quite a number of Jewish people who are opposed to the actions of their country as well.
They are being actually attacked in Israel.
Richard, do you want to come in on this?
Hey, two things. First off, it's the Eurovision Song Contest. You know, the Eurovision Song Contest is a bit of fluff, a bit of entertainment. It's a bit of a highlight for a lot of people. I love the Eurovision.
Yeah, I love it myself as well.
Yeah, but I kind of, you know, when do we draw the line at boycotts? You know, we talked a lot about this with sporting boycotts of South Africa in the 1970s that didn't necessarily shift the dial on apartheid. I also have observed over the years, there are several other countries who have got blood in their hands, like the Russians, who obviously aren't in the Eurovision at the moment, Turkey with their treatment of the Kurds, you know, Germany, Britain. I'm not undermining the whole issue over Gaza because I'm horrified as to what's going on down there. And I think, you know, people have to stand up for the interests of the Gazans, but also the interests of the Israelis. And, you know, ultimately the only proper outcome that we're going to get out of that whole terrible situation, and by the way, there's also major problems in the West Bank, is to establish a firm two-state solution where there's a peaceful
Israel is very conscious.
Strong, independent Palestine.
Israel, though, is very conscious of its international reputation. And in a way, yes, it's only just the Eurovision Song Contest, but this, it would actually send really quite a strong message. I'm not saying it would affect anything, but we know it would.
If Ireland just pulled out of Eurovision,
well,
and protested,
not
Israel.
Ireland in and itself.
I mean,
but
that would be a bit like the Skibbereen Eagle taking a look at the Tsar of Russia and telling him he's got his eye on him.
So it would be pointless. But say France joined in a boycott, for an example.
I don't see the point of boycotts, because at the end of the day, the Eurovision is nothing to be taken terribly seriously. We all love it. Well, most of us love it. But, you know, when we get into this whole sort of dictation as to what we can and can't do, what we can and can't watch, you know, I get very uncomfortable. I share Pat's utter abhorrence as what's going on in Gaza. I think Israel has to be held to account on that. But, you know, I think sometimes activists are very selective as to what they actually protest against. I honestly think the biggest threat right now, apart from Gaza and Israel, is what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. And we are at the cusp of a potential third world war over that. And I think a lot more has to be done to protest against that.
Yeah, okay. But sometimes you feel that that's strategically playing itself out with almost a predetermined outcome. Paddy Rooney, as I say, it seems trivial, okay, and I get that. But, and there is an irony as well, too, that, you know, obviously the Eurovision Song Contest attracts an awful lot of interest and entry and support from the LGBTQ plus community, and you know, how many of that community could have lived freely and openly in Palestine. It's all very, very complex, of course. Let's not forget that either. But it is what it is. And of course, it would make no difference. And it almost seems a little bit silly asking the question. But people are motivated to call for a boycott because they feel it would send a message or show solidarity.
Well, you know, I'm with Pat on this one, because I'll tell you, What is going on in Gaza and in Palestine now is just completely outrageous. If Israel isn't going to do anything about it, if America isn't going to do anything, or Germany or France, I mean, you're familiar with the saying about the only thing for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. Now, if all the big states aren't prepared to do anything about it, and remember, not alone is America standing idly by on this, but they're actually arming Israel up to the teeth on this. And if those individuals that are standing outside RTE and that are campaigning about it, if they feel that that's the maximum that they can do, well, at least they are doing it, and they're doing it for the right reasons. It may have no impact, but the fact that we're actually talking about it and it is being reported, and if it's picked up even by the foreign media, I mean, Pat made reference to times gone by. It was back in the late 70s when the Dunn store staff in Dublin refused to handle oranges coming from South Africa. Richard said it didn't turn the dial, and it didn't, but it was one small thing that added to lots of others that created a momentum that eventually destabilized and overthrew apartheid. I mean, Israel is going to have to stop sometime. And the boycotting outside of the Eurovision Song Contest isn't going to do it, isn't going to be the thing that's going to do it. But it might be one small iota in the middle of one other million small iotas.
Okay, but so Saudi Arabia have an appalling human rights record. Yet people sit around every weekend and watch as their money funds the biggest boxing matches in history. They sit and watch LIV Golf, another interest, a big snooker tournament, because it is, and you get people like Eddie Hearn and Greg Norman and others coming out saying, you know, this is fantastic for the sport, the Saudis and the Prince this and the Prince that are amazing. You know, so, I mean, I know we can't sort of get paralysed. I think that was a phrase someone used, we could get paralysed by all of this, but like, the people that have been oppressed or abused or trafficked for labour by the Saudis, we need to stand with them too then, don't we? And if we're going to take this high moral ground, Pat, do you want to come in here? If we want to take this high moral ground, then why not extend it beyond? Why not extend it beyond Israel? It's a can of worms I don't think anyone wants to open because it gets too bloody messy.
It does, but the thing about it is that, yep. I mean, Ukraine, what's going on in Ukraine, the cameras have sort of shifted away from Ukraine now in recent times, and they've gone to Palestine. And there is no coverage at all about what's happening in Sudan, for instance, and there's no coverage at all what's taking place in Yemen. And I suspect the little bit that I can see in this in foreign media that there's as much killing and destruction going on in those two places than there is in Gaza. But the problem is, Greg, we don't have the capacity to save the world here all at one time. We only have the ability to focus on one thing. And, you know, we were all engrossed in Ukraine 2 years ago. Now we've moved away to Gaza. I bet you in 2 years' time we'll be on to something else. That's the problem with it.
Yeah, and indeed the president of Ukraine accepted that. He was concerned as soon as it happened. He says, well, that's the eyes off us now. There's this obviousness to the situation. But Pat, just to that
just
point...
Just wait until Trump gets in.
Well, that's...
then
that's,
we're really in the...
That is I going to be...
I really want to... Sorry, I mean, in a way... The mess in Israel, Gaza, Britain has a huge responsibility. This was Balfour, okay? In a way, Germany has been involved because actually the idea of having a safe place for Jews was the German solution out of guilt or whatever after the Holocaust. Europe has been deeply embedded in the creation of this problem, in the creation of the state of Israel. By the way, I'm sorry, Richard, but the two-state solution is dead in the water. It has been dead in the water for quite some time. Israel doesn't...
But you can't... Yeah, we're in a situation where Israel is in existence and we need to have a peaceful settlement on this.
And I can see why a democratic state where Arab and Jew and Christian are equal citizens is not acceptable. But basically, the West, including America, including Germany, including the UK... has bought into the idea of a Jewish state for a Jewish people, which is a Zionist 19th century.
It is. It's interesting.
I mean, we don't have any Arab or Muslim states. Do we abolish Saudi Arabia if we follow that logic?
But this is, in a way, our guilt. UK guilt is really, you know, embedded here. UK is also supplying arms to Israel.
Well, Richard's not a spokesperson for the UK, let's be clear. He's from Inishone. Okay.
Definitely not, Greg.
And the UK media has been extremely biased on this. I watch a lot of UK media because I'm a public news junket. I'm a nerd on watching news coverage. So I do know that the UK coverage has been extremely biased. And this, in a way, and they have shaped the attitudes of the British population in a way. Now, I am not anti-Jewish, and the whole slagging off of anti-Semitism for anyone who supports Palestine, we are now, those of us who've taken an interest and around the world, people are beginning to realise that there are a lot of Jews, including Torah Jews, who are totally opposed to Zionism.
So are you saying that, you're saying, Pat, before we move on, because we've other stuff, so you're saying that given particularly the awful treatment of Jews historically, that you can't see how that might fashion a mindset of theirs, that they do require a state that favours them, that offers them greater protection and freedoms. Like, you know, does the Holocaust not give a little pass or by to some extent in relation to that?
Well, you could argue that, but personally, I think that I've been to Israel, I've spent days in the Holocaust Museum, and basically what I have observed is that what is dreadful is what they experienced in Germany, they are reproducing against Palestinians.
Patty or Richard, do you want a quick word on that before we take a break and move on?
I think we have to recognise reality, and you know, there is wishful thinking out there that somehow the state of Israel will disappear. It's not going to disappear. So we have to, you know, push. And I know it's a remote possibility, and I agree with you, Pat, that, you know, that the whole issue is, you know, disappearing at the moment. But the only way up forward I can see is to push harder and harder for a two-state solution.
Is this not a little bit like, though, people in France? But just a quick question: is this not a little bit like people in France debating and backing people that are saying Ireland for the Irish, and that no one really else should have any influence or encroach into the democratic process because Ireland is for the Irish, and what they went through at the hands of the English and the famine, and would that not be like a similar conversation if this were a call in France and we were talking about Ireland?
In Ireland, we have a situation where there's a very strong and active Palestinian solidarity movement. It's probably one of the stronger movements across Europe. And that's partly because I also think we have a relatively tiny Jewish population, only around about 5,000 in the island of Ireland at the moment. So, and I'm not attacking the Palestinian solidarity campaign, because I think they're absolutely right to campaign for that. But what we get drowned out in the Irish media is the Israeli point of view, because there are so few people out there. Now, one of the key things that I personally believe in is that you need to have practical solutions. I think wishing away the Israeli state is never going to happen. But
the Jewish state, you say Israeli state, but what you mean is Jewish state, do you? Just so I'm clear.
No, I do think we need to have an absolutely solid Palestinian state. The problem we have in the West Bank, and people are ignoring the crisis that's going on in the West Bank at the moment, because we need to get all of those settlers, the Israeli settlers, out of the West Bank. Israel can accommodate them. They have enough desert land that they would return into habitable land. But the key, the problem is to get the settlers out of the West Bank and put them back into the main part of Israel. And then actually you have the beginnings of a secure Palestinian state, because at the moment, the West Bank is like a Swiss cheese of lots and lots of different Israeli or Jewish settlements that render the whole place practically ungovernable. And there's been very little talk in the media about the West Bank crisis.
That it supported the policy of the Zionist state of Netanyahu, whose father was one of the originators of Zionism, this vision. the perfect, they are, they fund, for example, trips by American Jews to the areas, Palestinian areas, free in order to encourage them to settle there. The creation of settlements.
Okay.
I'm with you there, Pat. I think the settlements have to go 100% okay. because you're not going to get a viable Palestinian state, at least in the West Bank, until then.
Right.
And then, by the way, the Gaza needs to be completely rebuilt.
Totally.
Okay, we must move forward. Thank you very much for all of that. We're in the company of Richard Logue, Paddy Rooney and Pat O'Connor, and we'll be returning in about 3 or 4 minutes with more from our guests. Stay right where you are. Okay, before we move on, Obi joins us. He's listening to the show. Hi, Obi. Just in relation to the conversation about the Eurovision and should Ireland and other countries boycott it in protest of the actions of Israel, what say you?
No, my position is that no, we should not boycott any sport or any entertainment issue. Artists and sportsmen and women should always be left out of politics, out of global issues. They are indirectly or directly peacemakers. Is it the mistake we made last year in 2023 was by removing Russia from sports? Whereas we know that both Ukrainian, their friends in Russia and Ukraine, who have been in Chelsea or Manchester or anything in any entertainment area, they would have been a source of peace. In Israel and Palestinian, there were people who were Palestinians who were playing ball in Maccabees and other areas, even in Tel Aviv, artists of various areas. We have seen them playing music in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem peacefully. There would be a source of peace, finding solution between Israel and Palestinians. It's a ladder way we campaign and put pressure on the United Nations. United Nations has fed the people of Palestine and the people of Israel. You see, in this area, they need honest politics. Sometimes, again, we in the West, who are out of this Palestinian and Israel, we judge based on our geographical, geopolitical areas. You see, we don't know what is happening within these regions so much. You see, so if you are an Israeli, you will fear it. What happened on October 7th? There is no way on earth any living being, whether animal or human being, should ever condone or say yes. Hamas did something that is evil. You see, Hamas was not acting on behalf of the Palestinians. Before you do things, you have to say, what if?
So, Obi, you're talking really, you're talking about, and you're making your point very clearly, but you're talking about collective responsibility. So the reaction to the awful, awful situation on October 7 was a collective punishment of the Palestinian people. That being said, through the most atrocious of actions, and now we're going to talk about art, don't get me wrong, but are you saying a reaction to that, the collective punishment of the Israelis, for an example, doesn't take into consideration the nuanced views within Israel?
What I'm saying here is that there was not this consideration. You see, the West Bank, the group led by Abbas, President Abbas, would never have done that. You see, the president, the people, the government of Palestine would never have done that because this is a government dedicated to finding solution for the between Israel okay. and the Palestinians.
All right.
Hamas is representing, yes?
No, I was going to say, I do have to move on. You made your point there really clearly, and I do appreciate it, Obi. Thanks, sir, for calling in. Does anyone want a quick response to Obi's comments there, or should we move on to our next topic? No, we're good. Okay. Right. So it emerged that Helen McEntee's Justice Department was warned 2 years ago that Britain's Rwanda plan would make Ireland an attractive alternative for asylum seekers. This news at the end of another turbulent week. As Ireland struggles to handle the influx, the government insists that it can and will return asylum seekers to Britain. Britain says it won't take them and has invited Ireland now to join the Rwanda plan. All the while, thousands continue to enter the country every month and are being told there literally is no place for them. They moved the tented city or the tented area yesterday. and still hundreds of people presented at the IPO looking for somewhere to stay. So, I mean, it's incredibly complex, but Paddy Rooney, where from here? Where from here?
Well, I was told one time that if I was ever faced with a problem, the golden rule is when you're trying to address it is not make it worse. And even, I don't know who thought it was a good idea for the Minister of Justice, Helen McEntee, to come out and say, she was stating the obvious and she was stating facts, I presume it's true that 80% of the illegal migration into this country was coming through Northern Ireland. But it was a very foolish thing for her to say it and B, the timing of it because of the local election and some of the by-elections that took place in England yesterday. Because what she done was that she actually set off a bomb here. I mean, I am a contributor to the Irish Independent newspaper, and a byproduct of that is that I have access, free access to the Belfast Telegraph. And you should see the attitude of the senior echelons within the DUP, the likes of Jim Allister, Jamie Bryson, and people within the Reform Party. They are absolutely lapping this up because of what we wanted as part of the Good Friday Agreement with an open border, what we wanted as part of Brexit, the backstop and the maintenance of the open border. And they're saying, well, you wanted it and now you've got it. This reminds me of a story that Neil Tobin used to tell about an American tourist driving around the west of Ireland in a big car, and he got lost and he meets this elderly man and who asked him for directions, and he says, well, if I was you, I wouldn't start from here. Because what has happened now is that the government is trying to deal with a very, very difficult situation, but it's actually been made worse and more difficult to deal with. I mean, you're after referencing a feature there in the Daily Mail. That's supposed to be some form of a humorous, laddish thing to say, that it's not even as serious. It's we're moving into the realms of ridiculousness now, because Ireland have options, but none of them, Greg, are palatable. And we have people coming into the country now at a rate of knots. The last time I was on your program and I talked about the millions of people on the move, the big mistake I made on thinking back on that is that I actually underestimated the number of people that were going to come into the country. And I didn't think that things were going to move so rapidly, because we have people now, for instance, being interviewed on Irish national and international TV. Some of them are face up and some of them are behind screens and so on. And they're talking about using social media and ringing their friends back home and telling them to come. And the world is now a very, very small place. And I said before, and I'm going to say it again, is that Ireland now seems to be a destination of choice for lots of people because of what's taking place in Britain, the fear of going to Rwanda or whatever. We've now left ourselves with a huge problem here that it looks like that we're not able to solve it. And the really worrying thing, I suppose, is that all of the opposition noises and voices within the Oireachtas and within the political spectrum, all they're doing is criticising the government of what they're doing, but they're not coming forward with any realistic proposals.
Well, they are saying let's invoke our opt out, for an example. That's what they're saying. Let's actively try and discourage from people coming here. Except that if you are leaving a country and you want your second language to be English, you look at Britain. That's a no go area. So you go to Ireland, like I do here. I do hear quite a lot of people making those types of suggestions. Like you've seen how quickly when the government wanted to discourage Ukrainians coming here, they very did. The tap was turned off almost overnight by changing some of the systems.
They did, but they could do that because people were coming from a first world country with a passport in their pocket. I mean, we have people now coming from, to all intents and purposes, third world countries, and either they have a passport or they're ditching their passport and they're just walking across the border. The Ukrainians didn't do that. I mean,
but one thing I've heard the people you talk of with no solutions are saying, if you don't have a passport, you are turned away before you set a foot on Irish land. If you don't have a passport. So if you were able to get on a plane.
The problem with that, though, Greg, is that we have a land border with the United Kingdom that has not been manned. I'm all for this thing about if you don't have a passport. Apparently, it's a criminal offence. Didn't Michael McNamara TD get that information out of Helen McEntee at the Oireachtas committee meeting? And it's supposed to be an offence if you turn up at a port or an airport in Ireland and you don't have a passport. How many people were actually prosecuted for that? Nil is the answer for that. And if people are coming in, they're just walking across the border. What are we going to do? Are we going to man the border then with the Gardaí and customs officials and military to check to see whether you have a...
Well, ironically, Rishi Sunak, and there is a lot of politics being played, Rishi Sunak in the House of Commons said, he twisted the language, he said, Ireland must ensure that there is no hard border on the island of Ireland, which I thought was... he's playing politics, obviously, because it's election time. I'll come back to you. Of course, Paddy. Richard Logue, your take on this, your view on this. You know, there's one thing just it's really important, I think, that we all should know. There's a timeline here. So Minister McEntee was told 2 years ago that the Rwanda plan would make Ireland a more popular destination. Also, we had an agreement, post-Brexit agreement, to return people from Ireland to Britain. No one was returned from Ireland to Britain. The minister said that was A, because of COVID, that's long gone, and B, because of a High Court ruling. It's very important, and it should have been covered more in the press, that High Court ruling came in effect of March this year. So we've had this arrangement with Britain before that March court ruling, and we've also had a warning to the minister that the Rwanda plan would cause many people to come here. So, like, I think it's really important that the public do not believe that all of a sudden this has just happened right now. No one knew what was going to happen. There was no time to plan. My God, this is a crisis. What do we do? The timeline is really, really, I think, important for people to be aware of. Richard, what say you?
So you rightly point out there, Greg, that the whole situation is a bit of a political chess game. We just had the local elections here in England yesterday, and clearly the UK government, who've got their backs against the wall at the moment, been looking to find any way possible to play the hard man in the international community. And of course, Ireland is a very handy whipping boy for that. You're dead right about pointing out what the minister did not do. And Helen McEntee ought to have, in my opinion, ought to have had a lot more political savvy when dealing with the British on this one. But we've also got to remember why we are where we are in the first place. The Rwanda plan would never have come about had the UK remained part of the Dublin Convention on asylum and immigration after Brexit. They had the option to remain in the Dublin Convention, but for political reasons, the Johnson government at the time decided they were going to walk away to deliver the hardest possible Brexit after the referendum. And this has the unintended consequence. And of course, sending people to a former war-torn place like Rwanda, I mean, you might as well be, you know, send them down to Iran or something like that, quite frankly. So Rwanda is obviously been used as a weapon by the British because they've chosen to do so. But now they're inviting Ireland to take part in the Rwanda plan as well. I mean, I just think, you know, we shouldn't be accepting that kind of Trojan horse from them at all.
Yeah, but obviously the British think, and I'm only quoting facts, not opinion, in terms of timelines and decisions and realities, okay? For fear anyone thinks that this is an attack on Ms. McEntee or a government. It's not. I've only stated the absolute facts. But it's an open goal for the likes of Rishi Sunak and others to score against Ireland because we have our pants down. So we have no defence to offer. So we've politically allowed ourselves to be the whipping boys.
We have. And, you know, the only way out of this now at this stage is I think we're going to remain in this mess for the next 3 to 4 months. I'm increasingly of the view that Sunak might call a general election here in Britain in July. And then we're going to be dealing potentially with a new government after that. So things may settle down. But at the moment, given, you know, that the Conservatives in Britain are in a pretty sticky position in terms of the public opinion polls, they're going to try whatever they can do.
Okay, and between now and July, let's imagine just between now and July, the language that's going to be used and how this issue is going to be used by the Conservatives as well.
Yeah, and I think they're going to, because their back's against the wall, I think they're going to do whatever they can to make themselves look good for the British tabloids. They won't give one hoot about their relationship with the Irish already. It's not been the greatest.
And Ireland looking weak means Europe looks weak. Why should they take anyone back if France won't take anyone back? Pat O'Connor, what say you?
Well, I think it is an unintended consequence of the mess that is Brexit. There was an interesting article, mind you, in the Times yesterday, where the Northern Ireland Human Rights Commission, it was asserted, Newton Emerson, believes that the law, the Rwanda law, may violate the Windsor framework. I think this is an interesting line, right? Okay. And in a way, clearly, that does need to be explored. I suppose I do think that the Rwanda bill, my God, it's been on the go forever, right? I mean, it's gone backwards and forwards, the House of Lords. And it's been in a kind of a race between the Rwanda bill and the next general election. Right? And I can understand how there was a gamble made, which didn't work, that in fact the general election would be called before Rwanda bill got through, right? And so that was a miscalculation and we are in a mess. We are also, I suppose, I do think that this, according to the RTE yesterday, something like 7,900 people who have been not given a right to remain. Of those, only 100 have been moved out of the country. Like, this is crazy. So clearly, without any of the subsequent developments, there are problems.
Right? Like, we are, what our policy is that it's better for people to leave the country voluntarily than for us to deport people, even when we decline them asylum here.
But we need to know how effective this is. And, like, in a way, it's very puzzling that there is apparently no record of what has happened to 7,800 of them, whether they're still here or have gone back voluntarily or whatever.
Now, Pat, so, yeah, and as well as that, Pat, we have, these are people we're talking about here. And many of them are fleeing desperate situations. We have a responsibility to treat them as humans, though, and not as pawns on a chessboard in any dispute with Britain or not. And like, not us, I don't mean us, I mean us collectively. We can't lose sight of the fact that, you know, having a situation where people can come here, but then telling them we've nothing for you when they do.
Acceptable, but it's also, I heard a man being interviewed yesterday on RTE, and basically he'd been running a cafe in London. He was Pakistani, and he'd been running a cafe in London, and in view of the Rwanda bill, he said that Britain's not a safe place, mate.
Okay.
And like, he should be coming in under skills. He is not fleeing persecution. And in a way, I think this is clearly people who are fleeing persecution.
Okay.
Been falling down in our ability to care for them because we have basically not been running an efficient, effective system.
Thank you. 30 seconds, Paddy.
Well, there are two things coming out of this, I suppose. And one is that the ESRI has forecast that the population of Ireland is going to reach 10 million people in about, what is it, 20 years' time or whatever. And it now looks like that most of that population increase is going to be new Irish, and we better start planning for that. And the second thing is that what happens, the welfare of Britain has a direct impact on the welfare of Ireland. And for all of those people who think that the Irish government shouldn't attend the Queen's funeral or the King's coronation or invite the royal family here, this is, we're reaping it now here, because this is all about building up political capital to have a good relationship with Britain, because someday we might need to cash in that card, and that time is now.
I don't know if we're dealing with honest brokers, though, in that regard, even if we do have those cards in our midst. But listen, it's been a fascinating conversation, as always. Paddy Rooney, thank you so very much indeed. Pat O'Connor, you know it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Have a lovely weekend. And certainly, not least, but last, Richard Logue. Take care of yourself, Richard. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye.